What power is appropriate, even legal, for workers to have in their attempts to unionize? That question is before the U.S. Supreme Court in the form of a challenge to so-called neutrality agreements. Employers promise not to block unionization drives in exchange for giving the union access to workers to make a case for unionization. Another case on the docket this session involves compulsory union fees. An Illinois home care worker challenged paying fees to a union she didn't support. On both cases now, we're joined by Benjamin Sachs, Harvard Law professor. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hello, it's great to be here.
Let's talk first about the neutrality agreement. I had not heard of these before, and it's hard for me to understand how this would be a Supreme Court case. Is there pressure in taking these neutrality agreements on the part of employers?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say you haven't heard of these before. The neutrality case, the organizing agreement case, is a classic sleeper case for the Supreme Court, by which I mean this is a case that seems to involve a kind of arcane provision of the labor law that nobody's heard about, that nobody's paying attention to. But the stakes actually couldn't be bigger here, because what's at issue in this case is whether people will have any longer an effective right to organize unions in the country. And I think it would come as a shock to many people that the Supreme Court is being asked to essentially outlaw the process through which most unions get organized today. What the Supreme Court is being asked to do is to say that whenever whenever an employer grants to a union some concessions in this contracting process about the rules of organizing, that those concessions are a bribe and actually a felony under federal labor law.
Wow.
So that's what the Supreme Court is being asked to hold. You know, I for years taught this theory in my labor law class at Harvard, and I taught it as kind of a crazy, outlandish theory, because I think the truth is that for decades, while all of these things were going on, no one ever thought that they were corrupt. In fact, people thought this is entirely consistent with what unions are supposed to do, that is to say, to go out and try to organize workers. And if employers cooperated in that effort because the employers wanted to, that was fine, not corrupt. But now we have this theory before the Supreme Court. And as I said, it's really a threat to unions' ability to organize workers, because the more traditional National Labor Relations Board process simply doesn't work anymore.
Mm. Well, a potentially transformative doctrine, depending on the outcome before the court. We're talking with Benjamin Sachs, Harvard Law professor. We should note that the case here is Unite Here, Local 355 versus Mulhall, and an employee has brought this case, has brought this challenge, saying that this neutrality agreement constitutes, as you say, some sort of form of corruption. Has the Supreme Court ever ruled that in a non-union world, that an employer has an unfair advantage if they're the ones who are advocating against a union, that if there's a union versus employer battle, that unless there's a neutrality agreement, the employer has some sort of advantage?
You know, I don't think there's a specific case in which the Supreme Court has said the employer has an unfair advantage. But the whole structure of our federal labor law is designed to make sure that employees have a genuinely free choice on the question of whether or not they want a union. The law is not supposed to push workers toward unionization, and it's not supposed to discourage them from unionizing. It's supposed to level the playing field, so to speak, so that workers can choose freely on this very important question. And a lot of what the law is designed to do is to prevent employer coercion of workers when they're making that choice. It's supposed to prevent union coercion of employees when they're making that choice, and employer coercion, to leave it to the workers to decide. I think the problem is the law hasn't functioned. The National Labor Relations Board is too slow and too weak to actually police these things. And so unions and employers, I think, have sensibly agreed to, by contract, create their own ground rules. It's worth saying here that in a way, Mulhall is a case on which liberals and conservatives ought to actually agree. Because in a lot of ways, what Mulhall is about freedom of contract. It's about the freedom of unions and employers to, by private contract, design their own rules for union organizing campaigns rather than having the government design those rules, at least giving unions and employers the option to do it by private contract. And for the court to come in and say, no, it's illegal, it's actually a felony to arrange your affairs privately in this way, that's something that I think conservatives and liberals should chafe at. The other thing that's worth saying here is, you know, there's been a lot in the country over the last couple of years about unions and labor law. We've seen big fights in places like Ohio and Wisconsin. And the issues in those fights are very real and very much about the extent to which people are comfortable with unionization and how powerful we think unions ought to be. I would say this is very different than those fights, and it's very different because this is not the democratic process playing out.
Well, we'll get a glimpse of how the Supreme Court responds to that argument. Before we go, though, Harris versus Quinn about fees paid by non-union workers because of union representation in an industry. How important is this case, Harris versus Quinn?
Yeah, so this is like the 1-2 punch for the United States labor movement. So Mulhall is about private sector workers and the ability of private sector workers to effectively unionize. This case, Harris versus Quinn, is a public sector case and challenges under the First Amendment of the Constitution the permissibility of the ways that unions have collected dues from workers for decades. And the issue is whether in the private sector a union and an employer can have an agreement in a collective bargaining contract that says that if you work in the bargaining unit and you're represented by the union, and you benefit from the things the union bargains, can you be required to pay some portion of the dues and fees that members pay? Nobody can ever be compelled to be a member of a union in the United States. But in order to overcome what we call a free rider problem, the law has long allowed unions to charge employees for the fees that the union provides. What Harris versus Quinn raises is whether or not that is in fact still constitutional.
Well, the Harris case will be heard this session. The Mulhall case is actually going to be heard this week. Benjamin Sachs, Harvard Law School professor, thanks so much.
Thank you.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With 3 updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.